Welcome to the Bills Breakdown Podcast. I am Nate Schreiber, and as always, with my co-host, Alex Pollinger.
All right, we are back after a bit of a break from the Bills Breakdown, but we are here to talk about, well, the only thing that really matters for the rest of the season, and that is Josh Allen's development, because the Bills are all but eliminated from the playoff race. They need a million scenarios to go their way and win out, and I don't see that happening. So, Nate, let's talk some Josh Allen today.
Yeah, for sure. That's really what the rest of the season is about for the Buffalo Bills, is the development of their franchise quarterback. And he has certainly shown progress both games since he's come back. He really looks like a much different quarterback than he did when he played before the injury. And to see the progress, that's probably the most encouraging thing for me, because it was very clear to anyone who watched his tape, anyone who studied him, that he was pretty raw coming out of college, but he had all these physical tools. And to see him being able to put it together, maybe not for an entire game yet, but for the entire second half against the Dolphins, he looked amazing.
Yeah, and I thought he played pretty well against the Jaguars too. That's a tough defense. And, you know, during these two games, it's been something totally different from what we saw before, like you said, Nate. And I know I have to eat a bit of crow here, because I wasn't all that excited about the Josh Allen pick, but I am now. I mean, you can see the physical traits were always there, but I think the second half against the Dolphins was the first time when you're like, wow, this guy can take over a game. And that gets me excited, because I know there's a really high ceiling there. I think the ceiling is all-time great, and now we know there's a floor that can keep them competitive and be a mediocre team at worst. I don't know if it's too early to jump to those conclusions, but he definitely has a long future in the NFL, I think, just based on what we've seen the last couple weeks. I don't think he's going to be a complete bust anymore.
Yeah, neither do I. You saw he's single. He's been the Bills' entire offense, really. Him and Zay Jones on Sunday. He was him. Zay made some good plays. Josh Allen was basically the offense. And to see, and the Bills outgained the Dolphins by almost 300 yards, and they still lost. But to see him, if he can carry an offense like that now, yes, it was the Dolphins, not the greatest defense, but he carried the offense against the Jaguars too, and look what they did to Andrew Luck this past weekend. So I agree, Alex. I think that I'm comfortable with saying that his floor is going to be really like an average quarterback in the NFL. I don't think he's going to be a guy who throws 50 interceptions and kind of falls out of favor within a couple of years. I kind of thought that when they drafted him, but I'm happy to say that he has done a pretty good job of changing my mind.
Yeah, and one thing that intrigues me is he doesn't really have a direct comparison to a quarterback that's in the NFL now or anytime recently. He's a unique blend of a big body guy with a cannon for an arm, and that can go and run 135 yards on the ground. And that's something that's going to be really beneficial for the Bills offense as they add some more pieces so they're not awful next year, is they're not going to be able to just spy him with a middle linebacker if the Bills get any sort of weapons. And even if they do, he can make guys miss in space, as we saw him turn Kiko Alonso around like three times on that one first down run. Not that Kiko Alonso is any sort of special player. I think he's probably a below average middle linebacker in the NFL. That's probably fair to say. And
I mean, he does. One thing I will say about Kiko is he is generally a very good tackler, and he is sideline to sideline, he makes a lot of tackles. And to see Josh Allen do it to a guy who's towards the top of the list in tackles in the NFL, I'll take that. I mean, and when Kiko was in Buffalo, a lot of Bills fans loved him. Like, we thought he was pretty good. I still think he's good. I don't think he's great. I would say he's closer to the middle of the pack than than necessarily below average middle linebacker, though.
That's true. I'd say he's definitely better than like a Preston Brown, just because of the athleticism.
Yeah.
Yeah, so, I don't know, I think it's something to look forward to, because we told you back since probably week 3 or week 4, I can't remember exactly when, that Zay Jones was the best player on the Bills' offense for a while, and it just wasn't showing up in the box score. And, you know, we saw him score twice in the last game, and You know, he was easily their best weapon. LeSean McCoy doesn't look anywhere near the same player that he used to be. So it's really going to be the Josh Allen and Zay Jones show the rest of the season, with Kelvin Benjamin finally getting cut.
Yeah, that's another I don't know what took so long for the Bills to get rid of him. It was pretty obvious to, I think, anyone who remotely follows the Bills that Kelvin Benjamin was not in the long-term plan for the team. And they've been slowly getting younger as the season has gone on, and they're trying to play and develop the guys that they think are part of their long-term future. So it makes sense to move on from Benjamin. I thought they would have done it, honestly, a little bit sooner. But now we get to see Zay Jones is now the number one, undisputed number one wide receiver in Buffalo. And I'll be interested to see if he can continue on staying hot these last four games and really develop a good rapport with Josh Allen.
Yeah, I mean, he's got a pretty good matchup against the Jets on Sunday, especially if they put him in the slot against Buster Screen. He is an awful nickel corner, and Zay Jones can just go to work on him. I believe he did that last year with Tyrod Taylor as the quarterback, and the Bills' passing offense being, you know, probably just as constipated as it was this year. So he's got some good matchups down the stretch. It's just a matter of, can the Bills put anyone outside to draw some attention away? And I think not only are they getting younger, Nick, they're getting faster at wide receiver, which is key, because Kelvin Benjamin, Andre Holmes, they're both gone. They both couldn't get open. They're slow, big-bodied guys that aren't ever going to get any separation. And I think the Bills front office is realizing, okay, we have a quarterback that's not really all that accurate, but he has a lot of the other traits that can make up for it. And we need to get guys that can get open, so he has a little bit of leeway with that accuracy. So guys like Isaiah McKenzie, Robert Foster, they could be in the long-term plans for the Bills if, you know, they can prove something here in the last 4 weeks.
Yeah, I think the Bills are a few pieces away on offense from being at least contending for the playoffs consistently. The defense is already there. I mean, this defense with an average NFL offense makes the playoffs. I don't think there's a ton of, you can really debate that too much. You take this defense and give them the number, like a very, very average NFL offense, they're probably going to win 9 games. So I think the nice thing for the Bills is the Bills are a couple pieces away from maybe getting there.
Yeah, and let's just think about the Houston game. If Josh Allen doesn't go down, I think the Bills win that game. I mean, Nathan Peterman got them the lead, and that just completely blew it up in the last 3 minutes. I think that's probably a win. If Charles Clay wasn't stepping through quicksand in the end zone to get to the pass on the final play of the game, the Bills beat the Dolphins last week, and they're 6-6 and right in the thick of the playoff mix. So, like you said, Nate, you only need an average offense with that defense, and I think they're closer than most people realize to being good, just because they had some awful performances throughout the season, but a couple bounces and they're 6-6, so...
Yeah, I think that Bills fans should be excited about the future of the team. And I think given everything that the staff, the coaching staff, the front office staff has done since they've been here, there's no reason for us to not be super excited about the future of the Buffalo Bills. They're building the team the way that they want to build a team. They have their quarterback now, and now it's time to find the guys that fit around him. And we... as you said, with getting rid of Kelvin Benjamin, getting rid of Andre Holmes, starting to play some of the younger guys, they're finally doing that. And especially now that they're pretty much mathematically out of the playoffs, expect to see a younger and younger and younger Bills team, both on offense and defense, down the stretch.
Yeah, and I think, like you said, Nate, it's encouraging because there's a lot of holes on the offensive line. You know, they're putting out some young guys that are just quick. And I think... that's, you always want to be getting quicker on offense, as well as defense. But the Bills just have some really big-bodied, slow guys, and that includes Charles Clay. I mean, it's the ghost of Charles Clay out there. And I just think if they can add an athletic tight end, something close to a number one wide receiver, so Zay Jones can stay in the slot where he'll excel, that offense is going to be above average just because they'll be able to run the ball. And you have the threat of a running quarterback, and you know you have some sort of threat at wide receiver other than Zay Jones.
Yeah, and I think Zay is going to continue to be used all over the field like he has been the last few weeks. He's not going to be a predominantly slot receiver. I don't think he's going to be a predominantly outside guy. I think he's going to be moved all over the place to put him in best positions to get open. You saw he was used everywhere against the Dolphins. His touchdown catches, you line up in different spots. That little back shoulder throw didn't count. He was lined up on the outside. A couple catches out of the slot. And I think that's, now that he's the guy, they're going to have to do an even better job of moving him around, because defenses are going to see, okay, Josh Allen has really one guy that he likes to throw to. Let's not let him throw to that guy.
Yeah, and that's going to be a problem with the Patriots matchup there in Week 16, is Bill Belichick likes to take away your top option, and that is obviously Zay Jones. And if he doesn't have Zay Jones to throw to, then Brian Daboll is going to have to get really creative to get guys open, because there's not a whole lot there other than Robert Foster running a streak route or getting the ball to Isaiah McKenzie on some sort of, you know, jet sweep or just a quick bubble screen. The offense will be pretty limited.
Brian Daboll has done a pretty good job designing plays for Josh Allen. A great example of a play that works perfectly for him is that throw on the sideline to DeMarco on Sunday. They ran a very similar play, maybe the exact same play. I'd actually have to go back and look at it, against the Chargers. Do you remember that? It was, I think, the first play of the second half. He threw that. The same play, DeMarco was wide open, even more wide open than he was on Sunday, but Josh Allen made a terrible throw, and he caught it and, like, fell down.
Yeah, I think I remember that. Yes, I do.
Yeah, and they ran pretty much the same play against the Dolphins, and he looked so much more comfortable doing that against the Dolphins than he did against the Chargers. And a lot of the plays, a lot of watching him just in the pocket, he looked so much more comfortable. His footwork was so much better. And those little touch passes, the short throws, screen to Zay Jones, the touch pass down the sideline, the screen to McKenzie, those throws, much, much better than they've been. A lot of times, those are the throws that he really struggles with, when he can't throw it as hard as he can or as far as he can. He struggles way more with those throws than the throws down the field. And to see him make a few of those in this game was very, very encouraging for me.
Yeah, I don't know what it is with him with really simple throws. Like you said, I don't know if it's just because he has to take something off of it, or if it's something with his footwork where he's, you know, not taking the time to line up and get his hips aligned and his feet aligned to where he's throwing to. I'm not sure. I haven't looked at the film enough the last couple of weeks to see why he struggles with those, or if he just gets excited and rushes the throw. But that's something he definitely needs to improve on, and he did do much better against the Dolphins with that. So I'm curious to see how Josh Allen develops with that going forwards, because he has the longest air yards per attempt, I believe, in the NFL right now, Nate.
That's correct, and I do think there's a reason for that, beyond just that he likes to throw the ball on the field. I think that Dable's designing offenses like that because of the way defenses have to play you when you're a threat to throw the ball on the field. You cannot put seven guys in the box when the quarterback's a threat to throw it deep. And when you can't put seven guys in the box, like against the Bills receivers, you'd think, okay, we'll put seven guys in the box. They have no one that's going to get open. But when they can't do that, that's part of why Josh Allen has been able to run the ball so effectively, because they're just not enough. They can't send as many defenders towards the quarterback when you have the threat to throw the ball on the field. And he basically throws the ball on the field every play.
Yeah, and it's also enjoyable to watch that you're not just getting, you know, dink and dunk 2 or 3 yard passes that are effectively just the same as a halfback dive. It's refreshing because we watched that awful Rick Dennison offense last year, and, you know, the kind of conservative offense of Tyrod Taylor, apart from when he would throw 3 or 4 deep balls a game. It's nice to see a quarterback and a team that's willing to throw the ball down the field, because when you think about teams that are competing for the Super Bowl this year, they all throw the ball down the field. It's not these little checkdowns, you know, dink and dunk all the way down the field and take 10 minutes to get a field goal. It's big shot plays. You know, the toxic differential is one of the most important, you know, indicators in football of a good team. And that's something that I see the Bills being able to be a good team, because they get those chunk plays over 20 yards and they cause turnovers.
Yeah, and that's going to be the offense, I think, with Josh Allen. It's going to be a kind of boom. It's going to be a lot of big plays, kind of a boom or bust type of offense, just because of the nature of the way he plays. But that's something the Bills have not had in forever. The last quarterback the Bills had that could really push the ball on the field was probably Drew Bledsoe.
Yeah.
And that was 2004. So it's been a long time.
Yeah, it's certainly a welcome change, but I also think that's an indicator that LeSean McCoy's time might be up in the NFL because, like you said, Nate, they're not loading the box full to stop the run anymore with Josh Allen in there. So, in theory, you should be able to run the ball much better than they are outside of their quarterback scrambling for 135 yards.
Yeah, I agree with that. And LeSean McCoy has clearly lost a step. He's still good. Don't get me wrong. He's still a good running back. He's still one of the better running backs in the league. Like I would probably take him. Like if I was going to take the top 32 running backs, I still think LeSean McCoy's in that top 15 group just because of everything he's capable of doing beyond just running the football, catching the ball, blocking the long throw down the sideline to DeMarco. LeSean McCoy is the reason that throw got there. That kind of thing, the Bills don't have another running back that blocks like he blocks. And that's where I think his value is a little bit beyond the box score, but it's not necessarily worth what they're paying him.
Yeah, I mean, he's going to get paid about $9 million next year. He isn't worth that. And I know he's been really loyal to Buffalo and vice versa. You have to wonder if he's on the roster next year. And if he is, will he take some sort of pay cut, or can they maybe extend him one more year after that and kind of spread the cap hit somehow? I don't know, but he's definitely not like the bell cow running back that he used to be. They need to add running back. They need to get younger at running back next year because Chris Ivory and LeSean McCoy aren't going to cut it if you want to be a playoff contender.
Yeah, and the good thing for that is running back's probably the easiest position in the NFL to find quality players at. There's so many running backs in this league that are good, and they come from everywhere. You look at starting running backs around the league, there's not a ton of these guys that are these top 10, top 15 picks, even first-round picks. They come from everywhere, undrafted free agents, fifth-rounders, third-rounders, whatever. And that's – so I'm confident that the Bills will find a capable running back to pair with him next year, but I still think he's going to be on the roster. I mean, cutting him – and saving money, while yes, it's great, the Bills' cap situation is already in pretty good shape, and I can't imagine them spending all of that money in the offseason. I just don't see it happening. I think McCoy is important enough to the team that they will bring him back. But I wouldn't be surprised if they cut him. But there's a lot of the older guys, like they are starting to get rid of the old guys. I mean, he'd be what, the third or fourth oldest guy on the team next year.
Yeah, and like you said, Nate, there's an abundance of running back talent that's available in the middle rounds of the draft, even later rounds in the draft, or even undrafted free agents. One guy that I know is a free agent next year, it's got low mileage. He's probably a little bit older because he's been in the league for 4 years. Tevin Coleman. He'd be a great fit in Buffalo. I think Brian Daboll would know how to use him. He's just being completely misused in Atlanta this year. We saw how good he was his first couple years in the league, where he was that change of pace running back that can hit you with that explosiveness out of the backfield or catch passes, too. And I think that's something that could really help Josh Allen, is getting a guy like Tevin Coleman in there.
Yeah, I mean, he's been in the league for 4 years, but he's only got, I think he's got just under, let's see, he's just under 600 touches in 4 years.
Yeah.
Which is not a ton. I mean, the plenty of running backs get more touches than that every single year. But I think the Bills have a hard time luring in some of these top free agents, because especially a guy like Tevin Coleman, why would he not go to the Chiefs?
Yeah, that's true.
Like why would he, I just can't see him not choosing to go to Kansas City, because the running back situation there is terrible right now. And there, boom, here's a free agent running back who's a pretty good player to go to a contender. Hard to pass that up.
So, now that you brought up Kansas City, Nate, would you, if you were the Bills, consider signing Kareem Hunt in the offseason?
That's a difficult question. I would lean... There's a lot of things have to happen before I'd even consider it, right? The NFL has to finish this investigation, what's going on. the team also should be, whoever's going to, the Bills should do their own looking into what happened. But if at the end of this investigation, if they find that it was just that one incident that we have the video of and not the two other ones that are now being discussed, and they give him his suspension and he commits and he like goes and gets help and he shows he's working on it before anyone signs him, then I'd be more open to it. And he'd have to come to the team with a very strict set of rules, knowing he cannot make one mistake of anything, doing anything, or he's done. In that scenario, I would consider it. Before that happens, probably not. I would for sure rather have Colin Kaepernick come to Buffalo than Kareem Hunt.
Oh, yeah.
100%.
That's not even close.
Yeah, and it's crazy. Like the guys that in this league that are getting all these chances, Reuben Foster, when Kaepernick's still sitting on the sideline. But yeah, I think that Kareem Hunt, I would consider it if he does A, B, C, and D.
Yeah, I agree, Nate. If I'm the Bills now, you know running back's a need. That's a guy that's going to be extreme value in terms of his ability compared to what you're going to pay for him. And right now, if I were the Bills, I would reach out to him or his agent and say, hey, if you can start taking these rehabilitative steps to prove that you're trying to change as a person, you can have a job here next year once you're done serving your suspension or whatever. And we want you to be a part of, you know, this offense we're building with a good young quarterback and, you know, a good wide receiver in Zay Jones. We think we can give you some sort of similar situation you had in Kansas City where, you know, you can be the bell cow back, but, you know, you're going to have other weapons around you, so we're not going to have to give you the ball 30 times a game. And if Kareem Hunt's responsive to that, then, yeah, it's something you have to consider because the talent's undeniable. I mean, before this incident happened, Nate, I texted you a couple weeks in a row where I was like, Kareem Hunt's the best all-around running back in the NFL, and it's not really close. Well, that's probably a bit of a stretch, not really close, but he's a really, really good pass blocker. He's great at catching the ball out of the backfield, and obviously he's a great runner, you know, both before and after contact.
Yeah, his talent is there, and that's why I think he will get a second chance in the league. This is a much different than the Ray Rice situation, where Rice was, yes, he was 27, but he was old for a running back. He was already slowing down, kind of on the tail end of his career, and no one was really surprised that he never played again. Kareem Hunt will play football again somewhere. Unless these other, the only if to that is if these other two incidents get investigated and it's found he did some crazy stupid stuff similar to the domestic violence incident two other times recently, then I probably would not. I don't know if I would want that on my team. But some team will sign him. Some team is going to sign him at some point. There's just no really. I don't think there's any real way you can deny that he's going to get another job.
Yeah, I mean, the talent's undeniable, like we said, and he'll find a way to get on some team in the NFL. I don't know, sometimes you kind of have to sell your soul to be good in this league, and you know, I think you can mitigate that by showing, you know, that he's made some steps to, you know, make right, like Ray Rice did, but obviously Ray Rice was at the end of his career. Kareem Hunt probably not even entering his prime yet. He's like 23 years old. So I don't know. It's just something to think about, kind of a moral conundrum for the Bills, who like to bring in character guys that we see teams like the LA Rams just bringing in, you know, Ndamukong Suh, Aqib Talib, Marcus Peters, all these guys with attitude problems, not the same kind of problems as Kareem Hunt, but they're saying, give us your problem players, we'll take them. And it's working out pretty well for them. So I think it's something the Bills have to consider.
Yeah, it is, and it's difficult for any team to go through the whole process of the weighing the pros and cons of signing him, because what you don't want to be seen as doing is seen as taking domestic violence lightly or thinking it's a joke or not a big deal, because it certainly is, and that's I think teams are going to have some trouble, because wherever he ends up getting signed, there's going to be some public backlash from the fan base. It's going to happen, and the team needs to be prepared to handle it in the right way.
Yeah, and Nate, we know how these things go. If Kareem Hunt, you know, rehabilitates himself, has no other character issues, and is just kind of quiet, and just erupts for like a incredible half a season next year when he comes back from suspension, it's going to be the big comeback story. You know what I mean? Look at guys like Tyreek Hill. I mean, Tyreek Hill has taken steps to, you know, improve from what he did, which was, dare I say, infinitely worse than what Kareem Hunt did. He either was convicted or pled guilty of it, and he still has a job in the NFL. So I guess my point here is people's memories tend to be a little bit short, I think, if the guy can kind of stay silent with problems off the field and excel on the field.
Yeah, I mean, Tyreek Hill, he punched his pregnant girlfriend in the stomach.
And choked her.
And choked her when he was in college, which is significantly worse than anything that was on that video that got released. And he pled guilty. He served probation. He went to rehab. The charges ended up getting expunged because he did everything he was supposed to do in the punishment process. And by all accounts now, he's with the same woman still, and he does a lot of good charity work in Kansas City with her. By all accounts, he's changed. And I think seeing him succeed, it makes me really believe Kareem Hunt's going to get another chance. The tough thing is video. If there was video of him punching a pregnant woman in the stomach, would he be playing football right now?
No.
I don't know. I would venture to guess probably not.
Yeah, I think that's kind of the sad thing, too, that it takes video for people to get really upset and for the NFL and teams to take action. It's like seeing it somehow makes it real for people. I don't know. It just seems kind of silly that the guys that are caught on video are punished more harshly than the guys that, you know, aren't caught on video and do things that are really, you know, much worse, you know, on a scale of awful to women, and they still get a job in the NFL. So I think we can back off the dense subject now, Nate, and just come to a quick wrap up with something you said to me earlier before the pod. The Bills have the best quarterback situation in AFC East right now. It's probably not all that close.
Yeah, I think you can make an argument that the Jets are there too, near the Bills maybe. But Darnold looked really good at the beginning of the year. His first few games, he looked comfortable. He's missed a few games because of injury, but he has had his struggles. I think overall, Josh Allen has been better. Overall, he's been better. Darnold's been a better thrower, for sure. But I think at this point, I'd take the Bills quarterback situation over any other team in the division. I mean, the Patriots have an old quarterback who, while he's one of the greatest ever play and still is one of the greatest in the game today, he's not going to be there forever. And they have no one right now that is the heir apparent to Brady. And then the Dolphins have Tannehill, who for 7 seasons has done absolutely nothing. Of note, I mean, he hasn't won a playoff game. Made the playoffs one time. Just a very mediocre quarterback, and they have nothing behind him. No plan for the future because he's clearly at a ceiling. He's not going to get any better. So I think the Bills are in really good shape. And when's the last time we could say the Bills have the best quarterback situation in the division? Like 1990 something?
Yeah, probably. Yeah, it's just like you said, Nate. Tannehill's kind of average. He may even be starting to push down to below average with all of the good young quarterbacks coming in the NFL. I mean, we kind of had a few years there where quarterback play slipped, and Tannehill might have been a top 15 guy. I don't know if I think of him like that anymore. And the Dolphins kind of have some soul searching to do because they could have traded up one spot to go get Josh Rosen, and they didn't. Yeah, he went the pick before them. So they could have traded up there to take him, and they didn't. And here they are, stuck with a mediocre quarterback, a really good corner on defense in Xavier Howard, and pretty much nothing else.
Yeah, it made me pretty happy when I was reading the Miami Dolphins beat reporter stories after the game, and two of their beat reporters basically wrote their entire story about Josh Allen and how they would much rather have the Bills roster with Josh Allen than what the Dolphins have right now. And to see opponents, other teams saying that, that validates a lot of the things that we see and think about in Buffalo. And it puts in perspective there's a lot of people out there who are going to hate Josh Allen no matter what he does. No matter what he does, he's a bust. He's not going to be good. And then there are some people who think he's not as many people, but who think he's going to be great. And to see all these Dolphins players, coaches, reporters saying, "Wow, this kid's good," kind of validates a lot for you.
Yeah, it's kind of funny how people have to kind of search out for the evidence to prove their initial theory, right? Nate, you and I both had him ranked sixth out of the six quarterbacks in that draft class, and we were wrong. I know we've only seen three quarters of a season, but we were wrong about Josh Allen, and we'll tell you we were wrong. I just don't get why people have to stick to their original opinions and not be swayed by evidence that, the kid's got a potentially bright future, and he's not going to be awful. So it's exciting as Bills fans, like you said, Nate, to have other teams' reporters talking about how exciting the Bills' prospects for the future are, because that's not something you've heard outside of Buffalo in, probably my lifetime.
Yeah, I mean, the Bills haven't, since Jim Kelly retired, the Bills really haven't had a quarterback, a good quarterback. I mean, you could maybe count Bledsoe, but he wasn't a long-term solution. I mean, he was at the tail end of his career when he played in Buffalo. But beyond that, the Bills have not had a good quarterback, and this is the best chance at a good quarterback the Bills have had in a long time. And this is not to say Josh Allen is going to be a great quarterback in the NFL. This is saying that he has more than enough potential to be one of the greatest quarterbacks in the league. We have to just see if he's going to get there at some point. And that's why we're going to watch these last four games. We're watching these last four games to see him continue making strides in his development. That's really what we want to see for these last four games of football. Is Josh Allen doing things better, improving from things that he made mistakes on the last week?
Yeah, I think that's a great place to sum it up there, Nate. So that brings us to an end of this episode of the Bills Breakdown Podcast. I am your co-host, Alex Pallinger.
And I am Nate Schreiber.
Subscribe, download, give us 5 stars wherever you get your podcast so it can help others find it and give it a listen. Feel free to share the pod with one friend so we can continue growing the community. You can follow us on Twitter at Bills_Breakdown, Facebook at Bills Breakdown. You can also write us emails, BillsBreakdownPodcast@gmail.com, to give us any feedback, segment ideas, questions you want us to talk about. You can send them there or at Twitter or Facebook. So thank you for listening.